Welcome back to what episode 188?
188, Tim.
188. Okay, so Joe, this week some interesting stories. There was one that just came across my desk. I didn't pay attention to it at first because there was a headline involving GameStop, and I just not never had much use for video games and much less that retail outlet in general. But there is this stock shorting scheme with GameStop. Apparently, it was this threatened to really hurt the market, and the Nasdaq stopped trading on it. And it's because apparently there's a gang of Reddit degenerates, as they were referred to, sort of boogaloo investors. I don't really want to call them, who spotted the fact that this firm, Melvin Capital, had targeted GameStop. It's a retail outlet, video games that were, you see them in a lot of strip malls and regular malls. And I imagine they've taken a hit this past year. But nevertheless, there is a certain amount of, I think, affinity that consumers feel at GameStop. People like going in and shopping and playing games. But because the video games now can be downloaded, streamed, that type of business model isn't quite what it used to be, and it's hurting. And the stock had fallen, I think, down to like $4 a share this past year, and then it was targeted by this vulture capitalist firm, Melvin Capital. Apparently, you can make money on a losing stock. This is called shorting. And idea is you bet that the stock is going to go down in value. You quote borrow stock and agree to pay that price to borrow the stock, and then if the stock falls to a certain amount, you can pay it back that price, and you keep the spread. That's a crude understanding of what shorting does. Now, some people have described shorting as just a sheer speculation. I understand there is a sort of function to it because it is a good way for the market to function. To identify companies that aren't functioning properly. Perhaps the stock is overvalued, but it's also open for a lot of abuse, as you can see, especially if your firm or your cabal of firms can, say, cause a whispering campaign or have allies, in the financial news, and you can drive stock down even though that isn't what it should be. You can talk bad about a company. But maybe this company was, well, I guess, was targeted as a key vulture capitalist opportunity because they could drive the stock down, 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 make money as the company was, bankrupted or the stock lost value. Well, apparently a lot of people on Reddit got wind of this scheme and they started a plan to drive the stock up by buying it. Now, for understanding, some people use their COVID relief checks, at least that's what's being reported. I think this is, which is kind of funny. They bent the rent money or the mortgage on the stock, and they started driving the price back up. And I think it rose to like 1600%, which means that Melvin Capital is going to have to buy, was forced to buy the stock back at that heavily inflated price, which bankrupted them. And now all the people on Wall Street are up in arms because they got beaten at their game. All these well-established firms were beaten at their own game. As many of these small trade daytime traders made a lot of money, apparently. This exposed this other firm. I think it's called Robinhood, which is supposed to be like a day trader firm. But it turns out they've been exposed as being a tool of the bigger firms as sort of gathering information on trades and such to help these larger firms make a lot of money. So now apparently Melvin Capital has been bankrupted and now seeking a bailout, perhaps. A lot of other big actors on Wall Street are upset about this because they got burned playing their own game. I think it's hilarious. It's funny, but now the SEC is investigating. So, so do you have any insight into this?
Yeah, I have opinions. So what happens is the group at Reddit were able to determine where the margin calls were inside of this gigantic short position against GameStop. So when you have a short position, and think of like Melvin Capital, of having thousands of short positions, not just one, it's not just one big lump, it's thousands of different trades at different prices and they're representing different investors. But all of these trades have margin calls potential against them because when you have a short position, the regulations are that you if you because you can have these explosive results against you, if your the loss eats up X percentage of the money you have in margin, you must liquidate the position, right? So this is the basic structure of the short position in the market, and it's all of the gigantic hedge funds that trade the short positions would have this, and most of them trade both sides. They're long and short, but against the short position, the Reddit group, they worked out that that if they just hit the bid in a very narrow and fast way, they could reach them different margin points. Now at that moment, they knew that the group that had the short position would have to liquidate. Now what the way you liquidate is to buy the stock.
Yes.
Now you can see what happens here is that when it's a domino effect, literally it goes on, and if they're clever enough, and what I and there of course there's rumors that they actually knew where the margin positions would be triggered because they had hacked into the account, you know, because these guys are very sophisticated, at least some of them seem to be. And it isn't, you know, the Reddit crowd that did this is not, as far as I can tell, organized like an army. It's not, you're even inside it or outside. It's just a whole bunch of small traders that communicate and are very sophisticated and saw that there was the potential to profit by you know, this short position had been against GameStop for a long time and had made lots of money. The stock had gone way down, and so it was ripe to be attacked, and they just timed it very well. Now, what was different is that they are accused of manipulating price. In other words, so they would know that someone was going to, you know, have to, because his margin call would get hit, he would have to cover his position, he would be buying. And that this would drive the price up to, you know, to point X, and then they would see there's another short position just a few dollars away if we can just get the price up to there. And so this is what they did apparently, is they would find these leverage points and then drive the whoever had the short position to do the work for them. That person would then buy the next tranche, and then so up you go. Now, this is you know, under any understanding of what the market should be, this is just free enterprise. There's that they're doing nothing other than what the large trading companies are doing. So why would this, you know, be so singled out for so much vitriol? There is the meme is that it's because they're the little guy and the giant trading company is, they're upset, and that these people should be supported, and the trading company should be seen as evil. I don't know, Tim. I'm not sure I buy it. It seems to me kind of a distraction from other things. I think that you can't, you know, it's sort of like the Trump supporters. You really, your heart goes out to them because of why they are supporting Trump, but they are, you know, the vast majority of people just don't understand who Trump is or what Trump, you know, represents. And so they're just walking down a blind alley. I think that the this kind of short trade, I don't think it's going to become, you know, widespread. I just think it's a moment. If and I think if it's real, which I'm afraid it's not, I'm afraid it actually was just an artificial. I mean, whether or not these guys actually did it, I don't know. But the way it became a media story and how it's being given to us psychologically, I think is, you know, kind of, I don't know. I just think there's, it's a little too cut and dry for me, and the timing just seems suspicious. But maybe I'm just sensitive because Biden's presidency has kind of pushed me over the edge.
Well, one thing is just how decoupled Wall Street is from like economic reality. How
Yeah.
stocks can be manipulated without other than just sheer speculation can be driven down, up or down. So it's you would think, you know, the whole function of Wall Street is to raise capital for various, you know, enterprises. productive enterprises. And that now we've gotten to the point with flash trading and computerized trading and this stuff. How to what extent AI is driving these things? How these firms have sophisticated software allows them to trade, seconds and milliseconds to make them to gain edge on the market, and pretty much has nothing to do with the value that GameStop or any other company provides to the economy, any value-added enterprise or business. It's just sheer speculation. And of course, given the occulted nature of finance, I mean, how do you even know what's being done with the financial markets when you have, the plunge protection team, the presidential working group on markets, or you have the New York Fed that can just under the table, provide funding money to any favored firm. It's like, and with the more or less the U.S. budget, federal budget, more or less going black in 2018, that's what Catherine Austin Fitz writes about. I mean, really, the whole finance is just a completely rigged casino, and it's like, how does any little guy even participate in it,
Yeah, you can't. And it's really well said that you should be like working for Charles Schwab, but they should have that speech at the beginning of every person who comes in to like start an account. I mean, that is truly clear-minded on your part.
I mean, you might make money, but only because you just happen to be in a certain position at a certain
yeah,
time.
I mean,
But
the
it's nothing
thing
to do
is.
with your foresight or your investment or investing in anything that's gonna help people and lives get better materially and these things. It's just no reality to it,
Yeah, I mean, I have strong opinions about this. I mean, the thing is, the dollar has no value other than it's a psychological force. I mean, at one time there was, it had the capacity to be exchanged for gold, or and then at another time there was, there was the strength of the U.S. economy, and there was some prudence in terms of the creation of dollars, but that was, literally generations ago. I mean, the last 40 years has been a complete financialization of reality, so that the dollar is just, people think it's worth something because they've been trained to think it's worth something. Now, what has happened because of that is that it has swallowed up the stock market. And now the valuations are under the psychological structure of the dollar, which is to say, we think they're valuable because we've been told they're valuable. The problem is, as you point out, that there really isn't any underlying reality to any of this, and it could go away in a heartbeat. I mean, it would be possible, and I actually think that it is going to happen. I mean, this is, you know, I am. I have these dark thoughts. Well, you recall the flash crash? It was about like, I don't know, 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, the flash crash was a 1,000-point drop, except it wasn't 1,000 points. It was 999, just like the S&P bottom in 08 was 666, see 999, 666. So they're just playing with you, showing that watching the stock market on the screen is about as meaningful as like watching, a Pixar like movie. I mean, it's just literally, there is just no connection to reality at all. I know so many people where I live, it's, people, a lot of people have money, and they are just obsessed with the stock market. I mean, literally, they just sit there and stare at the thing. And they actually think they know what they're doing. They think that, they're geniuses because, they bought Tesla, just, I mean, it is, this is the end of the road of sanity, my friend. I mean, this is where the next stop is just complete psychic oblivion. And that's really how, the dollar and the stock market are going to go away. Look at the flash crash.
Yeah.
It can go away that quickly.
Well,
Like,
the financial
just boom,
system, yeah,
boom, it's gone.
the financial system has about as much integrity as our electoral system.
It does exactly the same amount.
And with electronic voting, it's even more similar. Even with, and just like the ballots are like funny money, electronic trading, it's all manipulated. It's interesting because people look at the stock market as some sort of index or indicator of well-being in the country, and I would say, and I it's quite the opposite. I remember it was in the fall. Sorry, it's just after Biden's bogus victory. And Donald Trump came out, and of course, this is the time when they're challenging the results in the middle of all that litigation and controversy. He comes out and just gives a few moments, a minute press conference where he comes out and announces that the Dow hit 30,000, and he walks out as if bragging right now. And this is typical Trumpism, crude, not understanding. Now, we've come off a year where supposedly the economy contracted. I know anywhere from 25% to 30% because of the lockdowns, massive unemployment. Apparently, it recovered somewhat, but never quite. People weren't fully employed. So yeah, so you have all that damage being done to the economy. Yet the Dow is topping out at 30,000. How's that doing? Well, because of funny money. It's got nothing to do with reality about the well-being of the country. It's just the financial system is doing well. Of course, the financial system is doing well because one of the functions of this whole scamdemic was to divert or to suck up all that wealth from the mainstream economy, send it into high finance, and this was done with the bailout, $6 trillion bailout. Something that the central banks decided that it was necessary the previous summer, and the crisis was cut. The pandemic was cover for that. But the idea that somehow the bloated stock market is indication of economic well-being or just overall well-being of the country is, simply is wrong. There's Catherine Austin Fitz, who has the Popsicle Index, and she's actually found as the stock market has grown, the quality of life in America has dropped, and there's a reason for that. Not just because it's the worship of mammon and it's the corruption of American society, materialism, and degenerate behavior. It's also because much of what capitalizes Wall Street and then the financial sector is the thing like the international narcotics trade and the money laundering. And the more money that gets diverted into Wall Street actually represents the greater circulation of narcotics through the country. And they show that you look at the drug addiction and the hopelessness of people's lives actually boosts the stock and results in crime. And there's a reason for that because drugs flow through there. Drugs created a criminal environment that money laundering and the money laundering helps enrich these companies. That's, a lot of these the proceeds from drug sales are laundered through fast food restaurants that are part of Fortune 500 companies or people's retirement accounts, their 401ks, or the money is laundered by buying up debt, which then fuels pumps primes the pump, so to speak. So it's complete opposite. And again, people don't realize this is that red button problem that she points out that Catherine Austin Fitz writes about and talks about, is that she said we could solve all these problems if you press the red button and we stop subsidizing, the manufacture and distribution of illegal narcotics. But to do that, your 401k would lose half or three quarters of its value. Are you willing to do that? And no one's willing to do that because no one's willing to admit that although they're against drugs and drug abuse and they're for, baseball, apple pie, American way, and Chevrolet, they're not willing to admit that the very companies that they're invested in for their retirement are being capitalized with the drugs that are destroying society, by the drug sales, So it's just one element of our financial system. The most weren't willing, the ugly reality of the financial system people weren't willing to acknowledge because they would have to reevaluate their priorities and how they live.
Yeah, and I agree with her, though I think, and incidentally, this would be like a rare point of disagreement because I really like Catherine Austin Fitz, think she's very clear-minded, really knows a tremendous amount about the financial world, far more than I do. But I'm just more paranoid, so I have a better grip of reality, you know. I think that the thing that you would have to stop is not just the drug sales, but the financialization of the debt.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if you think about the like Biden's new, I don't know, what is it, 2 trillion, 3 trillion, something, who knows, cares, some giant number. Okay, well, the government doesn't have any money, obviously. It just creates the bonds. Well, who buys the bonds? I mean, no one has any real money, or certainly wouldn't, if they had any real money, they wouldn't be buying bonds in the US Treasury. So the banks buy them with credit that they create out of thin air. It's a good deal for them because they charge themselves like 1/4%, and the Treasury is paying like 1.5% or something, So the arbitrage makes the money. Now that arbitrage, right? So the government gets the money, whatever goes out into the world. But the arbitrage over time becomes enormous. Right now, the arbitrage on the debt is like larger than any other financial structure in the universe, in the known universe. It's just huge. And that's really, I think, the thing that drives like the stock. All of these things become financialized by this artificial and invented out of thin air money, which comes into the banking families every single month, and that the money then distributes out through the tribe, and eventually out into the middle management, wherever, and then off into the stock market. But it ends up with whoever has the power of credit to create credit and then determine what interest rate they would pay on this invented credit. They can just buy the world and the universe, and that's what's happened. And
Yes, yeah.
so if we pulled the plug on the illegal drug money, which happened like this happened actually in 08, I believe, where the normal financialization weren't working, and you could just see that it was a drug money that was propping up the banking system.
Yeah, Acosta at the United Nations have wrote that article
Yes,
about that,
yeah.
yeah.
But the fact is that the financial system at this point is a total hallucination, and you cannot be, I mean, there is no way that the debt can be stopped. They cannot stop creating it. If the system wouldn't last two minutes. And so this will go on as long as we believe, as long as we have that belief that the dollar is valuable.
Well, and Catherine Austin Smith's defense, she does mention usury is also another problem. It's only one dimension that I mentioned. And she herself, as her positions have evolved, at least from what I understand following her work, have evolved over the years as her understanding has increased, that she herself was sort of kicked out of the club for her, I guess for her
She's the
whistleblower.
clearest thinker, financial
Yeah.
thinker we have on the internet.
But the
Would
debt
put
itself,
it
yeah, the usury creates this debt cycle because usury with interest, you have to always have to have growing economies to pay off, the interest, and it creates this idea of perpetual continual growth, which ordinarily wouldn't have this obsession. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to pay off the debt, so it creates this unsustainable cycle, which probably brought us to 2019 and 2020. When in the Jackson Hole meeting, where the central banks decided to go direct and start injecting money directly into the financial markets, and also I think where the decision was made or taken to unleash this fake pandemic, because that was the cover for the economic shutdown. And in order to bail all the stuff out, extend the life of the currency until they can convert to this digital currency, which isn't a currency, it's a credit in the corporate, the company store, which is the world as they see it, they needed to shut everything down, create the austerity to avoid hyperinflation in the meantime, just to shore up the dollar in the meantime, as they introduced these things. And of course, the crisis itself, the destruction of Main Street economies, small businesses, this would help transition to this system as they get rid of legacy systems. The same way that how they're pushing electric cars, it's just a way to convince people they don't want to have cars anymore. So within 9 years, we'll be in the year 2030, and we'll own nothing, and it'll be great.
Yeah, your Uber electric car, which can
Yes.
monitor, your every movement, will pick you up and take you to your vaccines, your schedule, and then return you after you've been to the transgender, barbecue. It's
Yeah,
everything will be plotted and graphed and aerial for you.
Dr. Rachel Levine will be there giving your anal swab for the COVID
That was really a technologic breakthrough, wasn't it? I mean, you can see how far we've come as a human species, with the anal swab.
for a respiratory disease.
Yeah,
You got something
it's
mixed
like
up here. Wrong end.
you really wonder what was the bonus for the Satanist that came up with that. I mean, he must have been given a yacht or something, because that was just the most degrading thing imaginable. And the idea that for a non-existent, illness that you would have people ending up to have an anal swab. This, they literally are just
Now,
playing
let me
with us.
ask you a question. Now, given the severity of this crisis of the pandemic and the importance of getting these tests, now where states have like drive-through anal swab centers? Okay, you wind the window down.
We're gonna have to look for like Rachel Levine to help us with that
Yes.
process because we're really gonna need some new technology to have it to do it in an expedited way.
But people will do it. I mean, it's like there's one doctor, an article was sent to me today where now a doctor is recommending four masks, not
Sure.
two, not three, quadruple masks, because four is better than one, and four is better than two, and four is better than three. So.
Yeah. I mean, and we, back in March, we actually had a show where we talked about the future of the lockdown, and we predicted all this. I hate to toot our horn. We don't deserve it, I suppose, but we did actually talk about that they were going to get more draconian and more ludicrous, more ludicrous as you progress through time, because they would start to break down the resistance. I mean, they want to take us into a subhuman condition, subhuman. And so, how do you get there? Well, the anal swab is you're on your way. You're going to. I mean, you can imagine soon there'll be mandatory anal swabs.
People do it. I was in town today, and I'm driving around with a friend, and everyone's walking around. It's a cold day, but the town is like a ghost town. But no, there are a few people walking around, and you'll see these people walking around with masks on, or by themselves. And then I went into a restaurant without a mask. No one said anything. Everyone there was wearing a people working there were wearing a mask, but I was able to sit down, order a meal without any request for wearing a mask. And this is in Washington, D.C.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, I
So.
have that. I always force them to make me wear a mask. The two places that I'll wear them are Trader Joe's and Costco because they're pretty strict about it. But I always come in without a mask, and I make just I force them to go through the process, and I try because I just feel like this is what you need to do. But you can see how they have been successful at the bottom quartile, perhaps would be the range of sort of sentient being that they've accepted it. And there's a lot of people, and I hate to say this because it's not a pleasant idea, but it seems to me that the lumpen proletariat would be, I think, the way I would express it. The lumpen proletariat has really stopped rebelling against the mask.
Yeah, and I think it was George Orwell in 1984 said, if there's any hope, it's with the proles, meaning because they were the less regulated, they were the lower working, and they were just weren't as important to the party. And I find that, generally speaking, if you like deal with tradesmen or mechanics, and they're generally not doing it. It's when you it's the like the middle class or pseudo professional class or managerial class that are more compliant, and it's just that you're just more regulated, licensed, and you're just not ability. They're just less likely. I guess maybe because they feel they've a they're not. This type of work they're involved with, they can afford to do it, I guess, or they just see themselves as not. They have, I guess, too much emotionally invested into the system with their status. I guess they're more afraid to lose a status immediately than say someone who who's doesn't fancy himself, high up on the or middle way on the totem
Well,
pole.
also the proletariat are typically broke. I mean, they have no savings, and so for them, losing the job is a big hassle. I mean, it's a real hassle, particularly now with the economy so bad. I mean, if you have one of these a good clerk position, Trader Joe's. I mean, if you lose that, where do you go? I mean, there's government subsidy, but that doesn't look like it's going to work out for very long. So I think people are clinging more emotionally to their occupations now than they were like 3 years ago, and they thought, well, I could always go tend bar.
Well,
You
that's one
can't
way
go
to
tend bar.
control people is make their employment tenuous.
Sure.
They did that with health care when they attached health care to employment. Gradually, I guess that started during World War II with making it, a tax exempt employee benefit as opposed to something, and when people started to rely upon it, where it became, I remember just like it was 10, 15 years ago, people were just talking about the biggest part about the job is health insurance and the severance. And where if you went a generation before or a couple before, no one ever thought about the cost of healthcare and life. And then it became like an obsession with people because what they'd done to the medical industry was something that can bankrupt you. And the whole obsession with health, which is basically sick management, what they've done has they've slowly poisoned people with poorer diets or heavy metal poisoning, the vaccine, all that goes into that, where the whole system is designed to poison people, make them gradually sicker and sicker and sicker, because that way they're more manageable and you can harvest wealth from them. That's what the health insurance. Look what they've done with health, where it's harder to see a doctor, but you're paying the same health premiums. You have
Yeah,
Zoom calls,
absolutely.
Zoom conferences.
I mean, the best thing you could ever do would be to give your health plan back to your employer.
Especially now, it's almost like questioning, like, why are people paying tuition for school? Why are we paying property taxes when no one's going to class? People have to start questioning these things. And so it's just okay, we're paying the same amount, but we're getting, 90% less service or benefits. So why are we doing it?
But it's good in a way, isn't it? Because it's exposing, like university as a fraud. I mean, they thought, well, gee, the online education is completely ludicrous, and what does it mean? But this is just the university's verbiage, and in all of its glory, and it doesn't really help me do anything. I guess the only reason I was in college was for the socializing.
So, well, this week, of course, the Department of Homeland Security issued a National Terrorism Advisory bulletin. The Acting Secretary of Homeland Security has issued a National Terrorism Advisory bulletin today after consultation with the intelligence community and law enforcement partners. There is currently a heightened threat environment across the United States that is likely to persist over the coming weeks. DHS does not have any information to indicate a specific credible plot. However, violent riots have continued in recent days, and we remain concerned that individuals frustrated with the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition, as well as other perceived grievances and ideological causes, fueled by false narratives, could continue to mobilize a broad range of ideologically motivated actors to incite or convince violence. Now, what false narrative is that?
But
What
notice they're
groups are
picking
those?
up that they're trying to bamboozle the people by adopting the language of the independent media. This is really an important sign, very important, because it shows that they know that we're cutting, that those of us who have been out exposing false narratives are actually getting people to pay attention. So now they're trying to bamboozle the public by glomming on to the expression. I was delighted when I heard the automatons, using that this week, because it wasn't just used there. There was a couple of other government proclamations against the public where they said, we've got to stop this false narrative. It's sort of replacing conspiracy theory as, the whipping boy of the oligarchs right now.
Yeah, you saw that. Did you see with Rand Paul on ABC this week with George Stephanopoulos, where he says a threshold question: this election wasn't stolen. And then Rand Paul went in to talk. Well, there is question of election fraud. We need to investigate it. And he kind of chided Stephanopoulos for acting more like a partisan than a journalist. Of course, Stephanopoulos is an old Clinton operative, political operative. He was installed at ABC this week a few I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. So it says a lot about the media that ABC would try to present him as a journalist, whatever that means. But it was funny how they're obsessed with people trying to admit, say it, there's no fraud, say it wasn't stolen, say it wasn't stolen. He wouldn't say it was stolen. He said, and the interesting thing is George Stephanopoulos dismisses the idea of election fraud or enough to overturn the election, but he admits that he doesn't investigate it. So how do you know if you don't investigate it, if there's enough election fraud to turn the election, when actually just a cursory examination does create that suspicion because it was more than enough. I mean, 200,000 extra votes in Pennsylvania, I think that's a good sign, and there might have been some problems. Or you have 135% voter turnout in precincts in Michigan. That's an indication, I think. A mail-in ballots that don't require a signature or postage dates. Well, that's an indication. I was like, what are you talking about? But it's interesting that they're just trying to, each time the more they talk, the more credibility they lose. But it's almost like they're just trying to repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. Even this, with the DHS warning, certain false narratives. It's like, well, that's a,
There it is,
yeah, there it is. But here we have, and the DHS also added that extremists were bred through anger over COVID-19 restrictions and 2020 election results and police use of force. The agency also cited the potential for threats to rise from racial ethnic tension. Of course, they're not involved in stoking. But it's funny that now, again, anger over COVID-19 restrictions, as if, okay, so now if you go out and get a protest, this becomes grounds for, I don't know, surveillance and intimidation.
Yeah, but think of the logic. I mean, so you're a domestic terrorist because of you're driven by anger over the COVID lockdown, in which you lost your job and are going broke. So you're resisting the restrictions,
Don't
and this
worry,
is
be
by
calm.
definition of evil.
Yes.
It's just the sophistry of dictatorship. I don't. I just can't believe that this round of lecturing the public to not have bad thoughts against the government right now is going to work. I just think that the statements that I saw come out of the government this week are just going to inflame people. In fact, I thought they were so ham-handed, you wonder, it's like the one you read. I mean, if that is that real, or if they really are they actually trying to provoke, a response from the public? I hope they don't have, a nest of agent
Oh, I'm sure
provocateurs
they do. I mean,
going to take over a
yeah.
Capitol building or something to create another photo op like we had on January 6th.
Yeah, oh, it's, yeah, this was interesting here. In the nation's capital, they're planning a permanent security fencing to come to the capital. A U.S. Capitol Police Chief said vast improvements to physical security infrastructure must be made to include permanent fencing around the People's Capitol building. And this, you're supposed to have access to this.
Wait a second. Wait. It's the people's building? Well, what is the fence for then? I mean,
Yes, this fence is about 8 feet high,
with machine guns.
and now if you're a politician and you feel compelled to build fortifications between, yourself and your so-called constituents, you might want to rethink your politics. I mean, they call January 6th an insurrection, sedition, a riot. I call it necessary negative feedback to the establishment. To
Well,
the
sure,
swamp creatures, yeah.
and I mean, of course it was, and the problem is that they were able to create the photo op, which they are now using in a very stupid and ham-handed way as justification for the war on domestic terrorists.
Well, it's over the top language, like insurrection. There's no evidence of an insurrection. Do you know what those words mean? I mean, people running around the hallways, knocking over some trash cans. Stealing a podium is not an insurrection. There was never any threat to the seat of government. No one's going to unseat Nancy Pelosi. If anything, the only people planning insurrection or treason, you could argue, was Nancy Pelosi herself, who admitted to calling the Joint Chiefs of Staff to try to take the president, the sitting president, Donald Trump, out of the chain of command. She has no authority to do that. Then you have this attempt to invoke the 25th Amendment, claiming that some other president is unhinged or crazy. No evidence of that. Ironically, though, this is done in furtherance of actually installing a man who is intellectually or mentally incapable of being the president. Don't,
Well,
well,
this is all just part of, the crazy months that we had anticipated, where they're really going after the psychology of the American with the European background. All of these things in my mind are just ways to not just distract us, but to confuse us. I mean, I think that the people who were there to protest the irregularities during the election were led off a cliff deliberately, but for the purpose now of having them confused and having all of those who are associated with them, people who are anticipating great things on that day, are now in a state of impotence. They're psychologically inactive and confused because of what went on. This is what happens when populism is led by the oligarchs. They find ways to get individuals. I mean, this has been the technique for hundreds of years, where you end up with both sides of the political contest, of the political dialectic, are controlled by one group, and then they can use their the positions of influence to create false narratives and false histories. So you end up with this event, no evidence. Trump did not bother to bring any really strong forensic evidence forward. All of the anticipation about what was going to happen is not there. Agent provocateurs rush the building, and now suddenly it's flipped on its head, and you've got domestic terrorism, coming out of the White House, going against the Trump supporters. For populism to succeed at this point, we just need the information revolution to get further down the road. People just don't have a hope. They don't have a prayer if they're inside the left-right, narrative, to use an expression. You know what I mean? They just don't have a prayer because they're just too easy to manipulate, and because they don't have any leadership that is really reflecting their interests. They just don't have it. They have Trump is a great example of just a leader who was created, and then they drew in people who had particular concerns about the government, and it looked like Trump was going to be, a kind of miracle worker, and then it turns out he was working with the other side all along.
Yeah, I mean, this was foreseen. As you said, the people who marched on Washington, D.C. on January 6th, the hundreds of thousands, the vast majority of which are well-intentioned, seeking some sort of redress for an injustice whether or not you believed it occurred, they believed it occurred, and they want to put either support or put pressure on Congress to indeed challenge or at least question the Electoral College vote, which they saw as fraudulent, especially in those six states. But back in 2008, the Army War College produced a 44-page report predicting this very thing. Widespread civil violence inside the United States would force the defense establishment to reorient priorities in extremist and defense to defend basic domestic order and human security. Now, I think that this isn't a circumstances that just unfolded. They've actually worked to create these circumstances. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I mean, it wasn't as if I mean, if you look at groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, which isn't being singled out as an insurrectionist or terrorist organization, even though they indeed are. In fact, they're a corporate-funded, state-supported terrorist organization, which most terrorism is. Now they're actually picking on real populists, or which have been who are responding to real issues, real grievances, fraudulent elections, these things. But they predicted this, and sort of they war gamed it, and and you saw the language of the war on terror, where first foreign actors or people with strange Muslim names were being targeted, and started to switch about the concern was the homegrown terrorist and these things, and these groups can always be sort of created or at least stoked, encouraged, and this is what the FBI has been caught doing, where they target someone who isn't the brightest of sorts, as to say, who's maybe marginalized, maybe broke, and they can be cajoled or bribed to participate in a plot, which then is
Well, look at the leader of the Proud Boys.
yes, that just came out this week that he was a FBI informant, yes.
Yeah, so there is a perfect example of that, where the public doesn't have a chance because the oligarchs will get in front of these movements with a leader, and that the leader will always have the ability to destroy the movement if it becomes actually threatening, or just take the whole thing into a psychological abyss where no one knows what they're doing, and it all just collapses in and of itself because it doesn't have any real direction or goals,
And it's people should take notice, at least pause at the thought. This isn't widely known, but the Department of Homeland Security itself Its establishment or setup was an advisor to that rather, was a character Marcus Wolf, who was a former Stasi officer, who went west after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, immediately started consulting with Western security intelligence agencies how to set up their own internal security systems. And so that's his spirit emanates throughout the Department of Homeland Security, and they set up these fusion centers, which again the model for that was the Phoenix program in the Vietnam War. People know about the infamous Phoenix program, and so I mean this is sort of the mindset or spirit which emanates these institutions throughout these institutions. So we have to, we just can't simply take their bulletins or their announcements at face value. I mean, it's obviously they have an interest in stoking. The FBI has sort of become notorious for these things, where they maintain a sort of a stable of informants that can go out and create cases for them. And this, the Newburgh, it was the Newburgh Six, and these cases where, again, none of these cases. In fact, the judge in that case said this plot never would have happened if not for the FBI creating it. Nevertheless, she sentenced the participants to like 20 years in jail. She said she had to do it. It was, and none of this makes any sense in terms of justice or even just logic. But nevertheless, there's a logic to the system itself, which is at play here. And again, it's the national security, domestic security state. It's almost like the national security state. It's there to keep you in a constant state of fear. It's a strategy of tension. And there's a long history to this thing, to this stuff. So when they talk about a domestic, a anti-domestic terrorist bill or law, be very skeptical of it. And now they're now targeting, if you talk about the language of John Brennan, who says religious extremists, right-wing extremists, whatever, basically their idea of an extremist is someone who happens to disagree with them. And there's no evidence of any particular, act of illegality or violence, or even a raucous protest. Again, this goes back to ideas. There used to be some acknowledge that people who thought they have a grievance, you give them some room to express themselves. Don't immediately call them a terrorist, even to the point of glass being broken or something. These things happen. You saw that in the 1960s, where a lot of these protesters, they'd be arrested, but then they were let go. Now they're coming after these people, with the full force of the law, making outrageous, charges like insurrection to some guy who sat in Nancy Pelosi's chair. At the same time, just months earlier in the previous summer, you had these riots occur in about 75, 80 cities, billions of dollars worth of property damage, neighborhoods terrorized, whole commercial sectors ruined, and nothing done to the people who orchestrated that. There's no investigation of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, which are interstate operations. In fact, the FBI said that Antifa were just an idea, it doesn't really exist. No investigation of these things. In fact, they're foundation funded and they're corporate funded. And it seems to me that if you apply domestic terrorism law to these protests or these riots, then some of the nation's biggest foundations and corporations could be theoretically implicated, because that's what these laws against terrorism do: support for terrorism, material support for terrorism, which are very vague. And give prosecutors a lot of discretion. Well, let's apply that to, I don't know, apply it to the Open Society Foundation or Bank of America, for supporting Black Lives Matter. And then the media is never, you talk about inciting. Well, listen, if you're going to construe free speech as incitement for any bad thing that may or may not have occurred that you say occurred, well, what about the media? What about the politicians that encourage Black Lives Matter throughout the summer to keep the pressure on, take it to the streets, which resulted in, 2,000 police being injured, dozens of deaths. I would say that the spike in the, if you look at the spike in the murder rate throughout the country, the homicide rate, cities are experiencing 55, 75% increase in the homicide rate. This is because of the depolicing or the defunding of the police and the overall mayhem or anarchy that it was created by these protests. What about
Yeah,
that?
it's just getting started because the cities will start to spiral.
And that's
They'll
intentional
lose
because,
their most productive, and those who remain will have less sort of entrepreneurial energy,
well,
and they'll be looking to the government and to crime, in order to survive.
Well, because the crime is a strategy for real estate acquisition. These are called opportunity zones, and this is to hollow out the cities, maybe bring in 5G, create the smart cities, or to profit off the you can drive down a property. Then this is almost like arbitrage. It is to do it with biomass, with biowarfare, with these groups, with these almost proxy forces that are used to do this. Again, it's an attempt. One thing is that we've talked about this is agents in this, of course, are government officials like certain district attorneys or mayors or sheriffs that have been elected, been the beneficiary of Soros largesse in their political campaigns and their campaign financing, and they get elected, and then once installed in Philadelphia or St. Louis or Chicago. Or Los Angeles, they don't enforce the law. They're selectively enforce the law, and they actually follow policies that's there to create mayhem, increase the crime. Because if you have a lot of street crime going on, not only can you create a situation where you can affect property values, real estate values, and these things, you can time it that way. You can pump in drugs when you want to and destroy the neighborhood. As you can also, it takes a lot of pressure because you can engage in high level criminality. If everyone's worried about street crime, they can engage in, all types of massive fraud, financial fraud, and no one's going to pay attention because they're worried about getting mugged. It was that Ron Unz article talked about California. He said that might have been the strategy of the California elite in emptying the mental hospitals in the 1960s and 70s, and also just to promote overall street crime because that took attention off their high level criminality. As they've bankrupted the state and gotten rich off the process.
Yeah, I know that article was interesting. I was living here in California during all that. It makes perfect sense. But I think that you're looking at with the corporate funding for Antifa and BLM, you're just looking at just a way to further the destruction of European culture. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of complication to it. That's really, there was inside the areas where you had the riots. If you look at where they actually occurred, Minneapolis, Manhattan, Seattle, Portland, the Antifa riots in general were just in areas where there were lots of middle class businesses, which were primarily owned by whites. And so this rebellion by the BLMs against these businesses, basically by breaking the windows of them, intimidating, the owners, was just a way to apply the culture of critique. In other words, it was saying, you have no defense against our charge that you are a racist and a fascist. So therefore, your entire culture and your entire soul is forfeit. You'll recall the, cultural Marxist feminist who said that white lives don't matter, as response to people who would bring that up, and with the idea of countering Black Lives Matter. She says, no, white lives don't matter as white people. I mean, she was the avant-garde. This is the culture of critique, by the Frankfurt School and the cultural Marxist reaching its conclusion. Where Europeans are, they have no consciousness at that point. They're not aware of themselves or anything else. They are below the lumpen proletariat. They're just, obviously incapable of any kind of coherent rebellion. And so, to counter this, we have to really get people to be aware of how they're being attacked, and this is why the independent media is just so precious for the existence and future of European ethnic, reality, because it's the only thing that it stands in the way of a obviously well thought out plan, which is for quite a ways along at this point, with the idea of just wiping us out, basically removing us from history. So this, all of the statements by the by the government officials in the last 10 days that have focused on, ending the people who have false narratives and political influence. They're all just directed against us, obviously, right? I mean, there isn't any kind of confusion about it. We just have to make sure that we continue to point out why they're doing this, Tim, and what these techniques have in back of them, and how they're applying to us. Because, we should be able to gain some fraction of the QAnon, hopefuls now that Trump is, should. I know some of them are still hoping that he'll return somehow, but there should be enough of them that are clear-minded now that we can start harnessing some of that energy. And imagine if the QAnon group had organized itself to take all of that energy and all of that internet publicity and just use it in an information revolution, right? Imagine that. Imagine them making everyone aware of the conspiracy against the Europeans. Now that would really be a dramatic acceleration of the success of the independent media.
Yeah, there is a Glenn Greenwald wrote an article about this domestic war and terrorism, and he calls it the trap. And it says, if you identify as a conservative and continue to believe that your prime enemies are ordinary leftists, or you identify as a leftist and you believe your primary enemies are Republican citizens, you will fall directly into the trap set for you. Greenwald added, namely, you will ignore your real enemies, the ones who actually wield power at your expense, ruling class elites who really do not care about right versus left, and most definitely do not care about Republican versus Democrat, as evidenced by the fact that they fund both parties, but instead care only about one thing, stability or preservation of the prevailing neoliberal order. Yeah, that's very true. It's basically it's that let's focus on what unites Republicans and Democrats on Capitol as opposed to what divides them, as that article that I read a couple of years ago said. It's they're all kind of the same class for the most part, and that's why you get no sympathy on Capitol Hill for the protesters on January 6th, because they do see themselves behind a wall, and again they want to ward themselves off or separate themselves from the hoi polloi, from the taxpayers, that they ostensibly or theoretically represent. But they do represent these oligarchic interests. Identifying what's actually going on, this is interesting because you can't do it. There was an interesting case. I talked to E. Michael Jones about this. There was this. There's a website called LifeSite News. I think it's out of Canada. It's a pro-life Catholic website, an organization that fights, the good cause and the good fight and all these cultural, moral issues. But they recently published an article on their website that urging their supporters to fight anti-Semitism. It was an odd article; it didn't seem to fit into this thing. How did anti-Semitism fit into this? The issues that LifeSite News was concerned about, and it turned out that LifeSite News got it in trouble in Canada with their Human Rights Commission. It's one of these things where someone charges you with vague hate crime, you can be brought up on charges, and you can get in a lot of legal trouble, even though it's not strictly speaking constitutional. And what happened was they had some people, the priest that runs it, I think, had someone on their behalf who was Jewish defend them. And then they published an article, anti-Semitism being a primary threat. And E. Michael Jones responded to it, that saying that why anti-Semitism? He says you got to one of the problems when you're talking about the issues of abortion and gay rights and the life issues, the cultural life issues, is you have to be able to critique or criticize Jewish organizations because they play a key role in advancing these things. And often, if you do criticize those organizations, you are called anti-Semite. So if anti-Semite can be used as a slur against you, it will blunt your efforts to fight these other things. And he says that basically, he says that Jews control the narrative or by accusing people of anti-Semitism. So by slurring, by accusing me of anti-Semitism, they control debate on these things, public discourse, and that's the source of Jewish power. And so you if you're obsessed about being accused of being anti-Semitic, you won't be able to fight these battles. And it's very interesting because when you're waging these cultural battles, you have to identify those groups or those agents that are waging it against you. And if you're, say, hesitant to go after Jewish organizations because you're Jewish, because you're afraid of being accused of anti-Semitism, you won't be able to really engage in a culture war effectively. And this is true. This is one of the problems in the Catholic Church is that they've sort of internalized the commands of their adversaries, and they've lost a lot of ground on the culture war because the church itself has a hard time confronting Jewish power in these matters. They use terms, euphemisms like secularizing radicals or secular humanism and these things. But there are groups with addresses and names that you could go after and criticize directly. And I found that this was very similar to the 1776 initiative that Donald Trump announced last year in response to critical race theory that got a lot of attention going into the election. And his idea was to promote traditional patriotic American ideas in education to counter a lot of the critical race theory that was being injected into the education system, anti-American propaganda, the 1619 project. It was a response to, sorry, more like the 1619 project. Critical race theory was another issue. It was very similar. It was going after the sort of these anti-white struggle sessions that have been sort of formalized in training and in government contracts and corporation and educational settings. So these sort of this culture attempt by Donald Trump, but it was very superficial and very weak. And the problem is that, much like the Catholic Church or Christians unable to tackle Jewish power or take on the Jewish question in these cultural matters, taking on the 1776 initiative isn't going to deal with the fact that the 1619 project is being promoted by the Jewish-controlled media, the New York Times, Atlantic, and these things. Nicole Hannah-Jones has no power. She's being set up as a proxy. So who's the man behind the curtain in these things? Well, it turns out it's Jewish organizations, Jewish money. The same thing with critical race theory. The people teaching these things, the black lady who's wagging her finger at the white people in these struggle sessions has no power. She's set up, and who's backing this? And so if you don't address the man behind the curtain, you can't really address his power. And unfortunately, it is primarily a Jewish operation
Yeah,
to
it
under to
really
destroy
hurts.
a European European a Christian civilization.
Yeah, absolutely. And a good example of this would be the BLM mission statement, which was, just this very sophisticated cultural Marxism, which actually talked about, the dissolution of the family
It's
as a goal.
Eros and civilization.
And it literally was
Or
Eros and civilization. And
yeah.
that is just the BLM. They actually had to change it. Now it isn't on the website any longer, but you can find it if anyone who's curious can find it on the original statement. And you can see that BLM was clearly being used as a conduit for cultural Marxism, right? And they were using the imprimatur of racism on the part of Europeans to bamboozle them, right? Because how can you defend yourself against the charge of racism? To then take another step toward the dissolution of your sexuality, of any kind of male authority, all of these things would then disappear, even though they aren't really directly related in any way to the original charge of racism. It's just that that's how the bamboozling, goes forward. Once they've got you confused, it's so easy just to keep pushing you into the abyss. So, the way that I've tried to counter that is try to get the people that I've been able to reach in the African American community to recognize that they are being controlled by the same groups that have come after European culture. I mean, we are all in one boat at this point, and it is about time we started to look amongst ourselves for some kind of strength and support, because otherwise we're all going to drown together.
Yeah, and so, but if you're not going after, the puppet masters or the people
Yeah.
pulling the strings, there's a reason why they're doing, the reason why you have woke capital and all these corporations that are promoting this. It's why you have the cancel culture is the individual, so I guess the self-described or officially recognized aggrieved groups, minorities have no power. Why are they being set up as proxies? Because they're going after the large, you could say the large majority of the country, which is, you could say, the heritage America. This is why the statues are being torn down. You have the iconoclasm with the support. Why Christopher Columbus? Why Louis the St. Louis, the statue, and that turns out that that was, again, blacks were being used as proxies, by a rabbi down there, to remove the statue.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how long, like, BLM can have favor with the black community in general. It is possible that it'll be kind of structural because it's just going to come out of the cultural Marxism that infests the universities, and so it's going to be around perhaps for a while. But you know, the people that I've been talking to from that community, they don't really relate to it at this particular time. They see it, there is enough kind of pushback to it and skepticism about its origins. The mission statement concept actually got around among at least some of the black intellectual groups that I have some communication with, and they recognize that they were being played. So, you know, let's hope that that actually can get some traction because we have to. If we're going to have a reaction that's effective, we've got to start organizing into the largest possible political power group we can. And even though I think that ethnicity is a very separating thing, and not in a negative way, in a very positive way it can be, but there has to be some at this particular time. We have to recognize that we're all in this one slaughterhouse together, because one thing I'm curious about is if they're going to continue to promote Antifa now with Biden as president. You know, because they haven't really done much. There was one protest immediately after, which was they were saying we're anarchists, we're neither Democrat or Republican. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if it just kind of disappeared, because it's they don't need it at this point. And so we'll see what happens then to BLM, because without the animation, the street thugs of Antifa, how much publicity will BLM actually get? The future of the Biden presidency, Tim, it's really hard even to imagine what it could become.
Well, he's like what, like a, I don't know, an aneurysm away,
Yeah.
and then Harris will be installed. Now, I don't think either of them have any conviction or power. They're placeholders or sock puppets.
Well, Harris was the most unpopular presidential candidate in history. She had like a poll rating of 1%.
Yeah, she didn't get one delegate, and
Yeah, and so the idea of putting her at president is just really very. And again, this I think these things are deliberate, and they're just done to take away the idea that democracy has any kind of meaning that's beneficial. You know what I mean? Americans have this idea that, we can look to, the president and this. I think we're actually slowly being led into the position where we don't think elections have any meaning. They're obviously rigged. The political class is not in any way related to us, and we just, accept that. We don't complain about it.
no, and then they're telling you if you do complain about it, you're a terrorist.
If you do anything about it, you are.
Now they're, I'm sure as the months pass by and they try to maintain, although there's some sign there, I don't know what their plans, who knows, there's maybe some improvisation going on here where, like, look, you have some governors now letting up. You have Gavin Newsom, which he seems to be in a lot of trouble out there, as the recall election, or the recall effort. They get what, 1.2 million signatures now or something, and their goal
Yeah,
is 2 million.
it'll definitely occur. There'll be an election, a special election, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's defeated. The problem is how do you get someone to replace him that actually reflects the people?
Yes, yeah, especially with the
When the last
state of
time we
elections,
did
yeah.
this, we got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes. So,
So it's, you can see the problem. So I don't really have a lot of hope for the replacement, but I think it's a good idea to remove Newsom just as a form of protest. It is kind of convalescing around the COVID control. I mean, it is this week there was a scandal wherein data came out that the ICU beds, I mean, you'd have to kind of understand how California is locked down. The criteria was established. The metrics were the percentage of ICU beds that are available. And the number was 85. Once you reach that threshold, you started getting locked down and they have a color code. It's just this very bizarre
85% is,
85% of ICU bed use triggered condition purple or something, And anyway, it turned out they, and I'd been trying to get this data, I couldn't find it. They kind of locked it up, but it turned out that the historical median ICU vacancy is 10%. So, in other words, 85% is literally 100% of the time, and Newsom obviously knew this, and so it was just an artificial and weird number. That was used to lock us down. And this has created quite a bit of anger because people realize that, well, since this is just normal, why did our business have to shut down?
Yeah, I mean, you think there'd be some legal liability here, both criminal and civil, because
Well, yeah,
this is
that's what I've
fraud
been
on a massive scale,
yeah, I've
obviously,
been
yeah.
trying to get that for, particularly now that this issue is out. I think that this is there is tort exposure for the state. And I also think that perhaps Newsom in a sane world, I mean, he could be arrested for this. If you can show, malevolence and malice, which I think is, becoming clearer and clearer. But what is even worse, the thing that really just infuriated me is that we have been subjected to just an entire barrage of horror porn stories from the LA Times about Los Angeles hospitals that are, this was, it's similar to the New York, stories that came out last March where the hospitals were collapsing. They had pictures of COVID, bodies being piled up. They had refrigeration units to handle the corpses. So the LA Times has been giving stories like that. They've interviewed doctors who are on the verge of nervous breakdowns because they've been working around the clock, all of these hopeless situations caused by the pandemic. Turns out they're all propaganda. Turns out that someone got the longitudinal data and found out that the average ICU percentage use was 98% during the flu season, which is less more than we've been having recently. So in other words, what we've been experiencing is a normal flu season. The LA Times has been giving propaganda story after propaganda story about how catastrophic the pandemic is. Like a person is dying every 15 minutes in Los Angeles or, in LA County or something. Stories like that, which when you dig into the data are just reflecting the, basically the flu season. And yet we've been subjected to the horror porn. I was talking with one political person and, his response was, well, it's because we've done such a good job with the lockdown and social distancing that we've got the flu for the first time to almost be non-existent. And I said, yeah, well, I said, if these techniques work so well, how come we have so much COVID?
Yes.
I mean, what do you, we, so anyway, the whole thing is just this,
But where's the science to back that up?
yeah, then I mean, it's just a hallucination. We've gone through this 100 times, and I'm
Well,
sure
where's the science to back up that there's actually a
there's no science.
SARS-CoV-2? Yeah, you
Yeah,
just
I mean
face
it's
that,
a
yeah.
fake virus. Certainly the PCR test is fake. The
Yeah.
all of the symptomatic COVID designations that the temperatures, chills, obviously these could be something else.
And just the assumption that all around the world these symptoms are caused by one agent is like, what, really?
And now even the fatality rates that are coming out of the LA hospitals are, they are as fake as the PCR test, you know, as everything else that they've done to try to create this illusion of an epidemic. So,
Well, you heard about the World Health Organization. They came out with I guess an advisory instruction to further testing, and now they're advising that to get test results. And this is one way that you can actually unwind the crisis of the pandemic and declare victory in conjunction with the vaccine. Is you can simply just require each positive test requires a positive PCR test and symptoms. And if they'd done that from the get-go, you never would have had a pandemic, which means
you
they
would
could.
reduce it by 98%,
But
but
there's your
they're also
pandemic.
talking about, yeah, that you have to, at least in some countries, they're going to demand that you produce the number of cycles. I don't know if they're going to be able to achieve that, but if they have
Well,
the
they're
drug
advising
testing.
to reduce it so you get more negative tests now.
Yeah.
So
So
it's
all
all
of
a,
this,
it's manipulation.
unfortunately, all of this is working to create the idea that the vaccine might be beneficial in some sense. Because that's what they're going to do. They're going to, change the criteria of the disease, which will, create a dramatically reduced, a population that has been infected. And they're going to say, well, see, the vaccine works. The rest of you have to take the jab in order to create herd immunity.
Yeah, well, this is what you do, and then you have your media do the job of either not talking about it anymore, or actually have reports where the hospitals are less stressed, and the doctors are saying we're not as worn out anymore, and we're seeing less cases. This can just be created out of whole cloth, and you can open up a little bit. You can have some sporting events, some venues allowed. You can allow 50% in a stadium, or you can finally let them back
Sure,
in, and they will create the illusion that, well, now it's over, and they can just unveil it again. They can have these cycles, and they've created the precedent now where business is being shut down, your civil rights being violated, your ability to earn a living, to get around, even to what to put on your over your face or not. I mean, all these things that people have just accepted because they accepted the official narrative, that
Yeah, but
there
all
was.
of this makes me really frightened about the vaccine because the long-term effects, the fake epidemic has produced a real, government power to enforce vaccines. And I mean, do you think they would really do that and not have the vaccine damage the population? I mean, it just seems to me axiomatic. This is what they're intending to do. And then of course now they've got there's hundreds of stories circulating about negative reactions to it. These are the effects of having taken the vaccine. They're usually the one of the stories so far, but obviously have been within a month of taking it, bad things happen. Some people are getting very bad reactions almost immediately. These are fairly small numbers relative to the numbers that are being vaccinated, but nevertheless, I think it's telling. And moreover, the way that these particular, they're not vaccines, these are gene therapies. The way they work is that it is produced forever. Forever, your body will continue to produce this artificial and similar to the what is supposed to be the coronavirus. You will be producing it so that your body will create an antigen to it, which would then recognize the real coronavirus. Man, looks sound just on its face pretty Rube Goldberg, but God help us if that function, if that producing of this, artificially constructed coronavirus by our genes, is something that then our immune system recognizes as bad or some
Well, yeah,
other.
you create autoimmune disorder
You'd
because
have we could have the entire population with an
because
autoimmune disorder.
it recognizes anything like a coronavirus as a coronavirus, and all of a sudden you get the response. And but then what they'll do is they'll do it to the other vaccination regime is they'll these are just new diseases, chronic disorders, like allergies or Crohn's disease or lupus, and they'll say, well, this is just or autism. And these are obviously, it appears to be neurological a disease, and they'll say, well, these are things occurring on their own, and this will be a subject for even more drugs or more treatment. And and there's never any acknowledgement just the idea of injecting heavy metals or toxins, mercury into your
Well,
muscle tissue might be
genetic
bad for you.
modification that of course the public has no clue whatsoever what how this genetic modification, what the long-term ramifications are. And what's even worse is the point that Dolores Cahill makes, that they'll be able, if you start having fatalities, autoimmune collapse, and people dying, they can claim that this is COVID, or COVID-2. So it's critical. One of the things that is just critical is to get the independent media to start getting access to real autopsies of people who are dying under suspicious circumstances going forward. Because, I mean, look, Tim, if we don't protect ourselves, the AMA and the Biden administration is not going to do it for
No,
us.
they seem to be, you got this old guy running out with a mask on, and he's just doing what he's told. Biden, I would think at this point the nation would have, Fauci fatigue. And I think it does, it's just not being
It does,
reported.
and Gates fatigue. I mean, but so it's right to have an open-minded discussion about about COVID. I think that's all good, but I think that the rush, warp speed to get the vaccine into everyone is what we really have to resist. This is, we talked last week about the importance of sheriffs. This is, if you start having, bad reactions to the vaccine, this is something that you really want your local sheriff to get involved with, because you're not going to, obviously, you can't go to the AMA. These organizations, in my opinion, are just absolutely cesspools. And you couldn't, in the same way that you could never have done 911 if you didn't have control over both the media and the academic universities, right? Because they could have risen up against this if they were under, independent control, free control. Well, at this point, the AMA is, in my opinion, just exposed as a tool of the oligarch, HOW. These are just WHO. I mean, these are just, they're you can't trust these things at all.
Well, the whole
So,
idea of the infectious disease model,
yeah, for example,
is
yeah.
there to, I think, largely to cover up pollution and poisoning that's occurred in the 20th century, in the past, 80, 75, 80 years. That's, I mean, I suspect that's largely of what the polio outbreak was. You blame a virus, and that's what's designed to be, cover. And that way, you get away with the liability, and you do it under cover of a viral d disease, which then is na it's nature doing it. Then you have to bring in the experts with syringes and their needles to protect humanity with their wonder drugs. And that's a sh it's one thing. It's an insurance protection racket. It's been so you get do away with the liability. At the same time, you create a paradigm where society it then is indeed subjected to various injunctions, injections, and diet modifications, as someone once said, and they can control them that way,
Well, it's just, we have this problem, Tim, and it's an immediate one, of how to resist the vaccine. They're going to make it very difficult, as we go forward. And it's something that I think everyone should be thinking about
What's a
is,
century of propaganda and indoctrination?
yeah.
It's narrative control, which was cracking. It
But
was,
they're going to be, I mean, like there was someone who died just like yesterday that had taken it because it was required by his employment.
And that's something where people are confronted with, but they have to resist that. And it's, that's a ridiculous requirement. I don't.
Right. And but so first of all, we have to organize ourselves legally so that if you're worried about vaccine damage, and you don't want to be forced into just taking gene therapy just without any, human testing, basically, except for us. You need to organize yourself legally.
Well, very. So, show me. I mean, you think you live in the same world? You'd say, okay, you want me to take what an experimental drug for what? Oh, a pandemic. Now, okay, how serious is this pandemic that I need to be a guinea pig for this drug, which was, which was expedited? The program was called Warp Speed, for Pete's sake. Obviously, the safety measures that supposedly apply to normal vaccines didn't obtain here. So maybe I'm a little skeptical that the not everything, not all the T's were crossed and I's dotted. And I don't want to be a guinea pig. And show me why I need to do this. Oh, to make you feel better. That's not really a compelling case. Wait a second. Is there a increase in the death rate? No. Is it
Yeah,
increased in
I
more?
mean the
Well, what?
first thing you want to do is find out if there is any resources, legal resources that are currently available you can access. There's quite a few groups that have sprung up. Maybe we should like in a show like list them at some point, but there's quite a few that have sprung up that people could take advantage of. And if I was in the situation where in the next few months I could see myself for one reason or another being either forced or having my children being forced to take the vaccine, and I don't want it to occur, you really need to right now start aligning yourself with these legal resources to understand what you can do in the way of saying no, and what power you have to keep your employer from firing you if you say no. Is there any? You know what I mean? These resources are out there. And you really want to be ahead of the curve because the vaccine will just come out of nowhere. I mean, they have so many ways now that they're talking about getting people to take it. And of course, like just 2 days ago, Tony Blair said that we should immediately go to the a passport based on vaccine acceptance.
But when has
So.
Tony Bill ever been wrong about anything, right? So you got to
Yeah, I
trust him.
know, isn't it something? But anyway, so these are it's you know they're trying by going this fast, they are making it difficult for us to have a rational response, right? We're just swept up in the COVID craziness. The election was obviously bamboozling, and now here we are where they want to vaccinate all your kids. Time to take a deep breath and do some hard work. This is why if you are organized to any extent, this will really be useful because a group can do this kind of work much better, to find out, well, who is the right attorney? Is there any money involved that we have to raise to get this done? What are our legal rights as far as resisting mandatory vaccine? Because I'll tell you, Tim, I just am very worried about the long-term effects of this thing, about the gene therapy. The logic of what they've done is so straightforward and clear-cut that it'd just be impossible for me to imagine that at the end of it, they would have a vaccine that wouldn't damage you. You know what I mean? In other words, the entire process that led us here was malevolent. The idea that the vaccine would not be is inconsistent. It's illogical. So I think it is going to be. I think there's, it might be the second dose. Maybe it's even, they're just establishing the principle. I don't know, but I wouldn't be at all surprised. And it's very logical that that this is going to be a change of your body that over the long term is really going to be destructive.
And it's particularly disconcerting or concerning because you have what's in this? The issue with, apparently was it the is it Charles Lieber, who was apparently researching or doing research. This is the guy who was arrested last year, and he was doing the virus research, but one of his specialties is nanotechnology.
Yeah,
And
thanks.
apparently the guy who's spearheading it was also into nanotechnology. Now, that I think that factors into sort of this this rollout of 5G and the Internet of Things and monitoring, and to the extent, are they actually, what are they injecting in your body, little particles to monitor your bodily functions so everyone can be observed. And this
Yeah.
sounds crazy, but this is the vision they have. Of course, then the 5G brings in all types of health problems because of the electromagnetic radiation, which does cause health problems. Of course, from how much and to whom. Now, as it gets stronger and stronger, you amp it up. It's going to affect more and more people. Of course, to the extent that that causes health problems, that'll be blamed on something else, a new virus, perhaps.
Sure.
As it's,
And if they have designed it so that the really destructive results don't occur for several years, then they can vaccinate almost the entire human race that they want
Yes,
before they have to, deal with any of the consequences. So you can see that it makes a perfect sense that, we've been locked down, our employment is gone, and now the vaccine is offering us the promise of a return to normal life. And under those conditions, it's sure hard to think clearly, particularly if you don't have employment, if your government subsidies are about to run out, or if you can't get your kid back to school.
But there's an Antifa mob attacking you.
Yeah, I mean here in Santa Barbara, or no, it's Los Angeles, they have you have to it's mandatory vaccination for school kids, except if you don't want to take the vaccine, they let you stay in your home with online schooling. Right. It's a real, kind of useful choice that they give you, isn't it? So the kids are getting, vaccinated en masse, and ooh, man, it's very upsetting to me. I'm doing what I can to sound the alarm in the LA school district, but to do so, you risk being a domestic terrorist.
Yes,
So
because you have because you're not sticking to the narrative. You're
yeah,
engaging in spreading of false
I'm
narratives,
spreading a false narrative.
according to the Department of Homeland Security. And of course, that whole the it's ironic is that entire agency, that $45 billion a year bureaucracy agency, was created on a false narrative.
Sure. That's exactly right. So they would know a good false narrative when they see one.
So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, we'll get them next week. Don't be a domestic terrorist.
I'll try not to. I'll try to be a member of the loyal opposition, a patriot.
There
Oh,
you go.
sorry, that is a domestic terrorist now.
Oh,
So,
that's right. I
okay, take it easy,
forgot.
Joe.
Talk to you soon, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.